Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studio right here in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know it's always in Union City and Weehawken, respectively. This is the latest edition of Working the Marks. And so I am New Jersey's premier and now seven-time award-winning journalist, the professor, Fernando Uribe. And he is undoubtedly, unquestionably, irrefutably, New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the amazing PBR, joining us here this week. What's going on, brother?
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting edition of Working the Marks.
I had to do the Vince intro on that one, you know,
just a little bit.
I mean, what's up with that theme song? Did we just get WCW'd on that theme song? You know how, like, when guys would leave WWF back in the day, and then they would go to WCW, and their theme song would change, and it would be, like,
yeah,
some offshoot, like, second-rate version of it, you know?
Oh,
did we just get WCW'd on our theme song?
Don't do that to D-Rock. That's a new theme song D-Rock just came up with. Shout out to our boy D-Rock, who handles all the tech stuff for our show, and we appreciate his dedication and his hard work to the show. I think it's still a work in progress. I think there's still like another part of the song I think has to be worked on. But, and I'll leave it up to D-Rock. He's a good guy when it comes to that. And folks, you know, of course, we want to thank you all for joining us from wherever and however you're tuning in here on Blog Talk Radio, dash Working the Marks, obviously. Also, you can listen to episodes on SoundCloud, obviously. And you can download the episodes anywhere, anytime. Don't forget to shoot us an email, what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show, via workingthemarks@gmail.com. Once again, workingthemarks@gmail.com. We love to get email from you. We certainly want to, you know, hear what you like about the show, what you don't. Hey, write to us. We love reading emails. And so does D-Rotten, again, our great technical supervisor here on the program. Check us out on Instagram, folks. We're going to be active on Instagram once again shortly, @working_the_marks. And, of course, check out our own Instagrams personally. The great PBR's Instagram, @PaddyRican. That's @PaddyRican. And certainly my own Instagram, @TheFernandoZone. And, of course, folks, check us out on Twitter. Now that Twitter is a nice, you know, free speech zone, thanks to Elon Musk, you can check out PBR at his Twitter, @PatrickSKVM. And check me out on Twitter, @TheFernandoZone. I'm getting away with a lot more stuff than I used to in terms of what I can say. So thank God for Elon Musk, PBR, on Twitter, to say the least. So great show.
Oh, all right.
Make sure you like us on Facebook.
If you say so.
Hey, I've seen a lot of my followers just go up, like, mysteriously. I don't know. It's
I got to be honest with you. I'm a little skeptical about a guy who sounds like a cheap cologne. You know what I'm saying? Elon Musk for men. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, ooh, the toilet, Elon Musk. You know what I'm saying? Like, what does it smell like? What does it smell like? What do you think Elon Musk would smell like? Not freedom. Not freedom. Freedom doesn't have the scent, you know?
Well, I'll say right, it smells like freedom for a lot of us on Twitter who have been getting the shaft for a while. So, I don't know. I'm just looking better on
Well,
Twitter.
Well, enjoy saying the N-word again, people. Enjoy saying the N-word again.
Terrible.
There you go.
Bro, we got a great show here. Obviously, our main event today will be previewing WWE Crown Jewel. Certainly, it's been in the headlines this week about whether or not it would take place. Some geopolitical events threatened it. Ultimately, it seemed like that is not the case. WWE working with the State Department, trying to really, really sort out exactly what geopolitical threat was imminent. Fortunately, it is not. It seems like people will be safe and sound in Riyadh today. For the show. We'll get to that in a minute, but let's tackle the news here. And, brother, a lot to tackle, really, during this week here on the news cycle. And one story that really, really stood out for me right from the get-go, and Kurt Angle, obviously, on one of his podcasts that he does. It was interesting, you know, on the Kurt Angle show, you know, he was talking about, and this is a quote that really got a lot of buzz on the internet this past week. And he went on to say very simply, it's not too much of a leap to say that Seth Rollins is the next Shawn Michaels. I believe he will be eventually. He's not there yet because Shawn put in a lot more years, you know, like 30-something years. But he does remind me of Shawn because everybody he wrestles, he has 5-star matches with. I got to tell you, man, you know, on the context of that, you know, Kurt Angle isn't wrong there. And he got a little grief, I think, on social media. I think, again, the context. I think he wanted to make sure that he said, hey, listen, you know, he's got to put in more years like Shawn did. But he's not wrong, factually, in terms of you look at the body of work of Seth Rollins, man. And, you know, whether or not he's going to end up being, you know, the next Mr. WrestleMania remains to be seen. But he is – I can't think of one bad match that Seth Rollins has had in next to forever, I think, even as a singles competitor.
Well, I mean, look, you know personally that I am a huge Shawn Michaels fan. Shawn to me is the GOAT. There's been nobody better. Nobody has done it better. Nobody has been able to utilize every aspect of working and being able to work like the way Shawn has and Shawn did. He obviously, you know, you can't compare the two, but there are a lot of similarities. I wouldn't say that Seth's entire career he's been at this point. I mean, he's always been a great worker. I just think in these last couple of years, since, you know, he's been able to come into his own with this kind of Joker-esque kind of, you know, Drip King, you know, type of gimmick, I think this is honestly the best work that we've seen from him in terms of his character. But everybody knows the guy has been able to do it in the ring for a really, really long time. He's always been great, even going back to his days as Tyler Black, you know, even on the indies. You know, there's something different about the kid. He was able to work. He was always able to do something. I think right now, though, this is his absolute best stuff. And, yeah, absolutely, he is having 5-star matches with everybody. And much like Shawn did, he can lose, but it really doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It really, really doesn't matter. And I'm one of these people who, you know, says that wins and losses really don't matter, you know, because, I mean, it's not really that big of a thing. You know, you can put a guy over just like that after losing for months and months and months and months. It's happened before in the business, so let's not kid ourselves. But, yeah, I would say that's a very fair comparison. And, obviously, Seth isn't the finished product yet. But, I mean, to say that there's a guy that's better than him right now in the business in terms of what they're doing, you know, it's very, very few. I mean, there's really nobody. There's really, really nobody. That's a pretty big lie, honestly, if you're going to say that there's anybody in the business better than Seth Rollins right now.
No, listen, and I think his work rate's amazing. I've still never been big on him on the mic, but in this version, this new version of him, you know, when it was the Messiah, and then it, you know, again, the theme song, and then it was Seth freaking Rollins, and, of course, the Drip King thing, like, yes, that is an example of when you know you're getting stale, because he was. I mean, let's not, this isn't revisionist history here, but let's just look back to just, you know, 3 years ago. You know, going into that WrestleMania here at MetLife Stadium against Brock Lesnar, yeah, he won the Rumble. You know, it was a great program leading up to WrestleMania. He was getting beat down every week. You know, this was his comeback. I get all that. But, you know, if you remember, shortly thereafter, they took the belt off of him. And then he got it back at SummerSlam, and then it was just, you know, the point is, I think that, you know, it was getting stale. And I think the, you know, what he did with that faction at the time, with Buddy Murphy and the AOP, the Authors of Pain, under the guise of Paul Ellering. I mean, yeah, that was right before COVID. And then shortly thereafter, obviously, he kept that. But I think it was a good reinvention. I think this is his best presentation. Again, never been a fan of him on the microphone, dude. I mean, not to say that, of the members of the Shield, obviously, I think we've all come to learn that Roman Reigns, you know, has come into his own in the last 3 years now. So clearly on the microphone, I think he's head and shoulders above both his Shield compadres, you know, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. But I think Rollins, I don't know. Am I wrong here? I think that in the last 3 years.
No. I like that you almost said, I like that you said Dean Moxley, you know?
Yeah.
Dean Moxley or John Ambrose.
Yeah, exactly, you know, or Tyler Rollins, you know? But I just think that, I'm still not in love with his mic work, but it's infinitely better than when it was getting stale in 2018 and 2019, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, dude, it got to a point where every promo was kind of redundant. And, you know, I mean, people could talk about the actual technical wrestling aspect of the business and how
and
that's really
heel.
What matters and blah, blah, blah.
And he's a better heel.
He's much, much better.
He's a better, yeah.
Oh, he is. But I think with this character, I think with what he has right now, he could be a better face than he's ever been. He really, really could be. And it could translate. It could really, really translate. But I think now this is the best promo work we've seen. I mean, and you know, look, the technical aspect is a big part of it, but it's the character. It's the character thing that drives you. That's what's going to help you connect with people. Ultimate Warrior wasn't the best worker in the world, but the guy had a great larger-than-life character that connected with people. Same thing with Terry Hogan. Same thing with a lot of people, you know what I mean? So, and I think that was the big thing that Seth was really, really lacking. He was lacking that character component, and now he's got it in abundance. And, you know, to your point, yeah, obviously Roman's really, you know, he's the best one, absolutely. But I think Roman has been, and I'm going to say a controversial word here, Roman's been groomed to be a main eventer. And I think Roman's been groomed to be a main eventer from Jump Street, whereas Rollins kind of became a main eventer, but it was never really the plan for him to be the guy. And I think that every opportunity he was given, he knocked it out of the park. It's just that character component that was missing, and now he's just – doing great character stuff, and Sami Zayn's another guy too.
No,
Sami Zayn was treading water, you know, for how long, you know?
No, absolutely correct, and I think it'll be interesting to see again for the remainder of his career if he remains healthy, no catastrophic injuries or anything else. I think, you know, Kurt Angle's premonition, I think, is going to come true. Some other things in the news cycle
absolutely.
This week, you know, looking at, and this is something that. I'll tell you right now, my skin crawled when I saw this. But report on Wrestling Inc. this week. Dakota Cohen, good job by her writing for the Wrestling Inc. She's actually one of the better columnists there, I think, actually, from a writing perspective. I think she breaks a lot of stuff, but she's a good writer. And that's what I look for. I guess maybe that's just the academic in me. But she writes this week, AEW has only ever produced one house show since the company's launch, with it coming on April 9th. In 2021 in Jacksonville, Florida, featuring a battle royal and the TNT Championship defending in the main event. Other than that one non-televised event, AEW has stuck to its weekly television shows, AEW Dynamite and AEW Rampage, and along with its pay-per-views and its YouTube programming, which I know the PBR is such a fan of, AEW Dark and AEW Dark Elevation. but there have been some rumblings in the company lately that AEW is looking to expand to more house shows in the future. There's still no concrete plans for the company to change course, but some on the roster have expressed an interest to Tony Khan that doing house shows would be infinitely better. There's a number of talent that would like the opportunity to wrestle more often. And again, some do on AEW Dark and Dark Elevation, but again, those you can still watch those. You can still watch those on YouTube. As opposed to house shows where, let's be honest, dude, for as long as we've been alive and we've been watching wrestling, you know, running house shows has given talent over the years an infinite amount of opportunity to work and get characters over, storyline development on the road. You know, as it stands right now, obviously there are wrestlers in AEW that do take some independent dates with different promotions. We've seen that. You know, WWE obviously has been running weekly house shows outside of its televised programs. You know, they've been called live events for years now, not decades. And again, you know, wrestlers find themselves on the road, competing multiple times a week, all around the world. And that's something we've come to notice. And that's been a staple of WWE, the product, the brand, for decades now. it seems like AEW wants to do that. I don't think it's a good idea. I mean, they can barely fill arenas during Dynamite and Rampage, respectively. Like just case in point, they did their show on Wednesday, you know, obviously live, and then last night's Rampage was live in Atlantic City. So again, I don't know what the attendance was. I've been trying to find that information out. I can't get it. It's not available apparently, but they're having trouble filling buildings for Dynamite, bro. And I just, you know, maybe a house show is good in a sense, gives talent, you know, more work rates and gives them time to develop. But I'm sorry, dude. I think that's what Dark and Dark Elevation are for people to keep working. But I'm sorry. They can't fill buildings right now. What makes them think they're going to fill a house show?
I'm going to have to disagree with you here on this one, Professor. I think house shows would actually be a good thing for them. A Dark and Dark Elevation, which is arguably the most riveting programs on YouTube, that's – you can edit those matches. You know what I mean? You can kind of fix it up and clean it up a little bit to, you know, get rid of the botches and make it somewhat presentable to well, their audience. Their audience, they'll watch whatever. I mean – you know, Tony Khan and Kenny Omega to come out and take a shit in the middle of the ring and people are going to watch it. Their hardcores will absolutely tune in for that. That's fine. But it's a matter of kind of growing your audience, and it's a kind of matter of being able to experiment with certain guys and not have them in that controlled environment where you can edit and fix it up and make it look all clean and pretty and let them get out there in front of a live crowd and let them work in front of a live crowd and kind of get a better feel on what to do in front of a live crowd, so that way when you're there on live television, you know, you can kind of, you have a little bit of an understanding of what to do and you're a little bit more experienced. And that's the thing. It's just all about getting your reps in. It's all about getting your time in. You know, eventually these guys could improve with the right kind of guidance. Do I think that they have to run the same size venues that they use for TV? No. I think it would favor them to run in smaller venues. And I think that they would actually pack those smaller venues. So let's say like a Hammerstein Ballroom. If AEW could do like a house show at Hammerstein Ballroom, that's going to be big and that's going to sell out. That's going to sell out. That's a decent sized venue for them. Obviously, they're not going to sell out the Garden. They're not going to sell out, what they call the UBS, USB fucking arena, wherever it is the Islanders play.
The USB Drive, USB Drive Arena, I like to call it.
The new Nassau Coliseum, right? You know, there basically. they're not going to sell that out for a house show. They could barely sell it out for TV. You think they're going to sell it out for a house show? So I think it would be better for them to do smaller places like that, to do like theaters and stuff like that, like the way NXT used to do when they would tour, where they would do like smaller, more intimate venues. And I think that would not only favor the talent because it would kind of help them experiment and work with certain things to try and see if it works with the crowd to get it over, but it'll get them their reps. So I think this is actually a real positive, and I think that this is something that they could use outside of those two aforementioned internet shows or sending these guys out there greener than baby shit to mess up in front of a live audience and, you know, not really give their company the best look. So I'm all in favor of it, and I think if they do it with smaller venues, It could prove to be pretty successful for them.
No, you know, fair enough. Fair points, man. And it'll be interesting to see exactly if they do that starting in 2023. Staying in AEW real quick here this past Wednesday on Dynamite. I got to tell you, man, as a guy who loves humor and comedy, to see the return of Slap Nuts on TBS, Jeff Jarrett joins AEW, obviously made his on-screen debut, turning on Darby Allin. And it seems like, you know, Tony Khan's doubling down on the addition of Jeff Jarrett, announcing that he is AEW's Director of Business Development. Seems like Slap Nuts is staying busy in 2022, whether it's wrestling Ric Flair in his last match, appearing in GCW, appearing on WWE programming at SummerSlam. Now he's in AEW. I got to tell you, man, Slap Nuts is quite the busy man this year. And now he's the Director of Business Development. What that means, I don't know. But since AEW is looking to expand live events in 2023, it seems like having a team led by Jeff Jarrett to oversee that probably is a good business decision. I don't know about Jeff Jarrett on TV every week, you know, hit people with guitars, but I'll get a laugh out of it. But what do you think, man, about that hire?
I think it's great from the Office side. I think that, you know, he was working for WWE in that same kind of department. You know, he was booking the house shows, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that this is another positive for them, and especially if they want to expand the house shows, having a guy with that kind of wrestling knowledge, his oversight. I mean, this is what Tony Khan should have been doing from day one. And it seems like he's finally starting to understand, hey, I need more experienced people. I need wrestling people, not just, you know, me being a fan for however many years and, you know, never getting any girls unless I pay for them. You know, he's getting wrestling people there, and he's starting to, you know, kind of, you know, implement a structure, implement, you know, some type of chain of command there, and basically helping his talent improve, because I think Jeff Jarrett will definitely help the talent do that. Now, as far as it goes with him being an on-screen character and all that stuff, and, you know, I mean, look, Jeff is, no offense to Jeff is a legend in his own right. Jeff, to me, is one of the most underrated workers of all time. The guy can go with anybody. The guy's had fantastic matches. He's always been able to deliver. Even now, you know, he still has some pretty decent matches. I'm not going to comment on the Ric Flair last match, but I will say that the GCW match that he had, you know, it was pretty solid. But to have him out there week after week competing with, you know, young kids, you know, sooner or later he might want to try and, like, you know, keep up and do something a little too cool maybe that he shouldn't be doing, and he might get hurt. Who knows? I don't think he's that dumb. I think he's actually pretty smart. He's also modified his style, you know, and he's a smart dude when it comes to wrestling in that regard, and there's no ego there for that. But to see him come out week after week, hit some young kid over the head with a fucking guitar, you know, that's not doing anything to help their young talent. And if they really want to stick to helping their young talent and promoting those guys and booking those guys in you know, in big time positions, having Jeff Jarrett come out there week after week and hit you with a guitar ain't going to really do it, you know? And Jeff, like I said, Jeff's a legend in his own right, but I mean, we're not talking like Sting. We're not talking like Stone Cold Steve Austin. We're not talking like, you know, Shawn Michaels or somebody like that. Like, you know, he's kind of like a B-level legend, you know? So to have a B-level legend out there week after week beating the shit out of your young talent, I don't think it's good. But, you know, let's see how he's used. I mean, I think, you know, he's going to help out big time from the Office perspective, but let's not put him out there too much as a TV character. And if you do, make him a mouthpiece, maybe, you know, make him a heater, have him do something like that. But to have, you know, a 50 some odd year old guy going out there and wrestling young kids and expecting people to believe that, it's a little bit of a fucking stretch, in my opinion.
No, I'm with you. Again, just for the sake of, and just on a side note here, I mean, you know, Shivani's still struggling to figure out whether or not it's Sting after 25 years. Is sometimes mind-boggling to me. It makes me wonder sometimes about the commentary team, like, oh, Jesus Christ, how do you not know that's not Sting, Tony, for God's sakes? But, yeah, definitely a very interesting debut, to say the least. Also, Pat, in the headlines this week, AEW did make it official. They did drop CM Punk merchandise from their website amid really the rumors of his imminent exit. You know, obviously, this point, all signs point to CM Punk's inevitable exit from AEW. ShopAEW.com obviously had dropped its new holiday 2022 ornament, which they were going to release, a limited edition CM Punk, you know, 2.5-inch round glass ornament. It was one of the featured items that is no longer available on the website. Now, the ornaments for Sting, the Young Bucks, Adam Cole, AEW World Champion Jon Moxley, Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, FTR, and Danhausen are still on the website. Who would buy a Danhausen ornament is beyond me, but I don't know. It seems that Punk and AEW are still negotiating a contract buyout. We don't know what that's going to entail. Allegedly, Punk is still sidelined with a torn tricep injury, on top of being kept off TV, obviously, after the infamous backstage melee at All Out in Chicago after the media scrum. I think all signs point to AEW's, you know, Punk's AEW career, I think, is coming to an end. And I think for a lot of people, and obviously the cherry on the cake, bro, was the fact that during Chris Jericho's open challenge for the Ring of Honor championship he has every week, the fact that Tony Khan brought out Colt Cabana this week in the open challenge. I mean, I think if that wasn't a clear tell sign, like, screw you, Phil Brooks, I don't know what is. That's something, you know what, that's almost something out of Vince McMahon playbook, I would say, you know, to do something like that, bro. I don't know. I thought it was beautiful. And I thought it was kind of, again, symbolic of this is the end for Phil Brooks. He's not coming back to All Elite Wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was definitely a middle finger to him. And, you know, just not only that, but just all the comments of a lot of the talent, particularly Chris Jericho. And, you know, apparently it was leaked that he told Punk that night that he was a cancer. And Punk had told him to mind his own business, which I agree with. I'm Punk here, with Punk here. Like, you know, okay, great. You fancy yourself a locker room leader. That's wonderful.
Pat, real quick, I'll let you finish your thought on this. But, like, real quick, how does that make you feel? Like, again, you're a former worker. You hear someone like Jericho who's never, ever shy about, you know, opining on anything. And it almost seems like Chris felt emboldened enough in his capacity or maybe in his position to say, you know what? Hey, Phil, you know what? You're not wanted here, bro. You're a pain in the ass. You're insufferable. You're tough to deal with, which is kind of interesting because it could be the pot calling the kettle black there. But, you know, what do you think about
that? I think Chris Jericho should mind his own business. And if he wants to have words with him, he should have words with him, just those two. He should pull him off to the side and talk to him. You know, for him to come in and get involved in something that has nothing to do with him, to just get over with the boys or get over with the girls. And, oh, Chris is hip. See, Chris is cool. He's sticking up for the elite. You know, and you know, seeming chivalrous to Tony Khan, come on, man, that ain't got nothing to do with you. Mind your neck. You know, for him to go out and to say negative things about Punk, and look, I haven't been a fan. It's no secret. Anybody that listens to this show, all five of you, you know, it's no secret that I have not been a fan of CM Punk's work. I haven't been a fan of Chris Jericho's work in this last couple of years. Chris Jericho, probably going back a little bit further, but Punk, his AEW run, to me, I haven't been impressed with his matches, but this is something that has nothing to do with you, Chris, you know? And I just think that, yeah, you fancy yourself a locker room leader and all that, but there's better ways to address it and to kind of get involved, to, like, get yourself over, to get brownie points, you know, with the boys and the girls. I don't know. It just comes off, like, a little disingenuous and a little unnecessary. And, you know, I think it's just better for him to kind of just steer clear, you know? He could talk all he wants about Phil. Yeah, Phil's the locker room cancer, this and that and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, Phil Brooks is more of a draw than than Chris Jericho ever was. And that's the truth. That is the truth. He was a bigger box office draw. He was a better main eventer. Okay? He sold more merch. He captivated people way more than Chris Jericho did. Chris Jericho was a great main eventer. He's an all-time great in the business. I got tons and tons and tons and tons of respect for what he's accomplished in the business. But let's be real here, people. CM Punk was a bigger name, and CM Punk drew more people, okay? You know, I just think, again, it's Jericho trying to look all chivalrous, trying to be all cool in front of his new friends and all that stuff. It is what it is. I think that there's better ways for him to do it. More importantly, if I was Phil Brooks, I would have been like, mind your own fucking business. You know what I mean? I would have been like, you know, straight up. Like, just keep your nose out of it, you know? But getting back to Phil Brooks and all that, you know, I mean, what did people think was going to happen after all of that? And especially with Tony Khan in charge. If it was somebody else, it would have been a different story. I think they would have figured out a way to hash it out, and those guys all would have been working together, and AEW's ratings would have been a lot better, and the product would have been a lot more interesting to watch right now. But obviously, since Tony Khan is not that kind of guy, and I can't personally imagine him, you know, asserting himself or being an alpha male in front of all these guys after he's hugged all of them and marked out for all of them and, you know, did all this stuff. Like, you know, people don't understand, like, wrestlers are like predatory animals, man. Like, wrestlers are like sharks. If they smell blood in the water, they're gonna attack. You know what I mean? And, you know, you could be a nice guy and all that stuff, and you could be cool, But, like, if they see that you're going to be a mark, they're going to try and twist your arm, and they're going to try and get what they want out of you. And I think that a lot of people in AEW did that with Tony Khan. That being said, whether Phil comes back to wrestle, we don't know. Whether he goes back to WWE, we don't know. Triple H did an interview, I think, earlier this week or last week, where he was asked about CM Punk. And his response was, hey, we're open to do business with anybody. I'm not going to turn down a phone call from anyone. But, you know, all parties have to be in agreement to get it done, which I thought was a pretty smart answer on his part. As far as the money situation goes, WWE is the only company that could really pay Phil Brooks for his services. But I think if Phil Brooks were to come back to WWE, it would have to be different than his AEW run. It would have to be with a little bit more oversight, and I think that Punk would have to deliver a lot more in terms of his match quality than he did with AEW. So let's see what happens here. But, I mean, obviously he's still got that big hurdle in the non-compete clause. So let's see where this goes.
No, and listen, you raise a good point about the importance of oversight, because we saw that with no oversight in AEW, you know, you left him to sort of book himself, and it was just not great. It just wasn't. Even the program with MJF, which I think ultimately was supposed to elevate MJF, and it did, obviously, to some extent, but it still was not as good as it could have. Just think about it for a minute, bro. Think about it, if that feud was going on in WWE and under the auspices of Paul's supervision. Think about how just 10 times better how much that feud would have been with Punk and MJF, again, with better production, better writing, better creative sitting at the table, you know, to oversee that. I think that, now, to your point also, you know, WWE is the only company that can pay him. And I'll go on record right now, and I've said this before, you know, Paul was smart to say that in that interview. He's a good business guy. I think that over the years, right, we've heard a lot of internet chatter and marks online go after Paul. Oh, Paul's always been for himself, and what happened in 2011 during that infamous interview in the middle of the ring when Paul was shooting and this and that. And, you know, a lot of time has passed. I think that Paul as a businessman obviously has grown infinitely. You can tell why WWE is still thriving the way it is. I'll tell you right now, man, they don't need CM Punk in his present form. Now, if they talk and, you know, him and Paul can come to some sort of agreement. He can go to the – we've talked about it off the air. You said this yourself. If he goes to the PC, you know, if Paul wants to send a ring to him and he works at home, like something. Because presently in its current form, CM Punk isn't a draw, dude. He's sloppy. Other than the music, that'll get a pop. But in the ring, he's not delivering. And I think that that's something Paul, A, would not want to bring back in its present form. And, B, they don't need him. I think – there's a plethora of talent right now. They don't need someone like CM Punk. Okay, will it sell merch and get pops? No question it would. But do they
need him? He'll draw, Burn.
No, he'll draw.
He'll draw, dude. He's a name.
No, Pat, he'll draw. But in his present form, will Phil Brooks be entertaining as a worker? Absolutely not. It'd be sloppy. I don't think Paul wants that right now. And he doesn't need that. He doesn't need that. He's got enough good workers on the roster.
I mean, let's look at it like this, okay? If there's a place where somebody who might be limited in the ring can thrive, it's the WWE. And Phil, I don't even think it's that he doesn't have it anymore. He still has it. His psychology, all that stuff, it's there. The physical side wasn't really there. I don't know what his training routine was. I don't know how he got prepared. I don't know if he did get prepared. I don't know what happened there. Obviously, it wasn't what it could be. But I think that with a little bit of time, a little bit of guidance, and just, you know, a little oversight, I think that he could be a main eventer again, and he could be big for them. And let me tell you something. The only thing that I think would be bigger than CM Punk coming back to wrestling would be CM Punk coming back to WWE. That would blow that whole thing out of the water, because this would be the most unlikely scenario of unlikely scenarios. You know what I mean? So I'm curious to see what happens, but I'm not gonna be negative about it, only because, you know, WWE is just so good at these things. And I think that they would be able to figure something out to make this work to make it successful, and more importantly, to make it lucrative. So
no,
let's
no,
keep
no,
our
Pat,
eyes
no,
peeled.
Pat,
I mean, for all we know, he might never come back, you know?
No, Pat, you're absolutely correct on all those points. I'm just saying that in its present form, unless something's changed,
sure,
his work rate, his appearance, just I think about the presentation. I think that right now, mm-hmm, yes, it's a draw. He's a draw. There's no question. Yes, it will be lucrative. But right now, in its present form, they don't need him. They need him to kind of take some time off, heal up, work on his presentation, his look, his cardio, whatever. And I think that, you know, listen, again, from what we're hearing or reading, Cody's rehab is progressing. He's due to come back at the Rumble. It seems like Cody's going to get a big push when he's back. Other guys are stepping up and really elevating, you know, Matt Riddle and others. I just think that right now there isn't a place for CM Punk in any sort of main event or even semi-main event role right now, based on what Paul has to work with. I think you look at the dominoes in front of him and you look at the bowl, I don't think he needs him right now. I think WWE is doing just fine financially. Clearly, we're seeing that. I think they're doing just fine with pops and draws and everything else. Again, if it's a better version of Phil Brooks, I'm sure Paul Levesque will be all about it. But in its present form, dude, it would do Phil Brooks a disservice, because he's already going out in shame to come back. And yeah, he'd get a huge pop. The fans would react. But that first match back, the scrutiny of the world is going to be on that match. And if it doesn't deliver, you know, maybe some time off, I think, is what would better suit Phil Brooks. That's just my opinion.
That's fair. I think it's fair. It's just, it's a matter of, like Triple H said, all parties being willing to be able to do their part. You know what I'm saying? Like we say in Spanish, tiene que hacer su papel. So if Phil is willing to do that,
WWE
is willing to do that.
Pat, that's code for like, mm-hmm, yo, this guy's got to get his life together. He's got to get his body back together. Like, that's code. That's what code for.
Agreed. He does have to get back to a certain level. I mean, look, working for, and this is no offense to AEW, you know, they're a big company in their own right. But I mean, there's a huge difference between being a main eventer in AEW and being a main eventer in WWE. And if Phil has any desire to get back to that level, I agree. He does physically have to do his part. So let's see what happens. But either way, this is going to be an interesting story regardless. And anything involving Phil Brooks, let's be honest, is always going to catch the attention of wrestling fans.
No, absolutely. And even, you know, even in a dream scenario, you know, later down the line, does he get to shoot on the Elite and Tony Khan? That could be compelling television, Pat.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, imagine that. Imagine that. CM Punk coming out on Monday Night Raw and shooting on everything that happened. I mean, that alone, the ratings would be huge. His first Raw back, his first event back. I mean, like, it would be big. It would be big, big stuff, and everybody would want to see what he's going to say. And especially with a guy like him who really doesn't have much of a filter, it'll be fascinating television. And I think it could just only go to help WWE and really to continue to do a lot of what Paul Levesque's been doing lately, which is reestablishing goodwill with a good part of the audience that they've lost. Mm-hmm.
And it'd be funny, too, because all these AEW marks who are so devoted to Phil Brooks, the minute he goes on Raw and decides to shit on Kenny Omega, the Bucks, Tony Khan, or whoever, oh, it'll be glorious to see. Oh, he's old, he's washed up, and F CM Punk, and watch. It would just be glorious to look at the Twitter universe. They'd all be shitting out on CM Punk. Oh, what a sellout. He went back to WWE. He sold his soul, and look at him. He's a has-been, of course. And, you know, but when he was in AEW, he was literally the second coming of Christ. But it'll be interesting. Now to some WWE news. Well, potential WWE news. It's being reported this week that William Regal's contract with AEW is coming to a close shortly. It would seem that reports are saying that William Regal is going to be asking for an astronomical amount of money to be signed. It may not be in Tony Khan's best interest to do that. I think it's a great negotiating ploy. You know, if you don't want to be there and you know that the other company, which you left, which you have a great rapport with Paul Levesque, and if Tony Khan doesn't want to pay you, I think chances are, number one, he left on good terms with Paul. Number two, he knows he'll be welcome with open arms, and he'll have an integral part, once again, in production, in some creative, in some television production, whatever. You know, I think it's smart by William Lindley to say, hey, listen, if I'm getting $1 million, let me ask for three, and let me see if Tony's in a pain. Now, again, that could backfire, because maybe Tony Khan thinks William Regal's too valuable to lose and will overpay to keep him. And then, you know, and then clearly William Regal's up Schitt's Creek, as they say, because he's like, oh, damn, this backfired. I didn't think he was going to pay me. Now he is. Shit, I should take it, because maybe Paul won't pay me $3 million. So, again, it's all negotiating ploys, but it seems like William Regal might want to go back to the WWE.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't he? I mean, you know, let's be real. You know, he's used right now as an on-screen character. They're not really maximizing that, let's say. I know that, you know, during their tapings, during their TV shows and stuff like that, he and Bryan Danielson go to the ring. They help out young workers. You know, they help teach him some technique and stuff like that, work on some things. So in that regard, he's been helpful. Has he been doing maybe office stuff, booking? No. I don't think he's been used in the capacity that he could be used in an AEW. So, I mean, even if, let's say, Tony Khan's like, I'll give you $5 million, Regal's probably going to be like, I'm sorry, Tony, but, you know, my heart's set in going back there and working with Paul and being a part of that again. I mean, look, you know, he's a lord. He's a real man's man. And I think he would be besmirched at the opportunity to not go back to help out Paul Levesque, to not be his right-hand man, and to not be with the biggest company in the world again. So I expect to see Regal back there. And you know, I think that he would be better suited that way. And I think that, again, it can only go to just further strengthen the product.
I'm with you. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with negotiations in the coming weeks. Pat here, let's go to the ratings. This past week, on Monday Night Raw, Halloween edition from Dallas, Texas. A little down this week, 1.501 million. Down slightly from the week before, 1.641. We did have, you know, a decent Monday Night game. I believe also that, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, there was a rainout for the World Series. So you would think, oh, okay, that could have also hurt WWE, but it didn't. More on that later on what it did in terms of ratings. But it was down this week. A couple of numbers here for the month of October. Well, actually, let's go to the end of September. September 26th, 1.674. October 3rd, 1.6. October 10th on Columbus Day, 1.824. Right after the Extreme Rules show in Philadelphia, October 17th, 1.804. October 24th, 1.641. And then this past Monday night on Halloween night, 1.501. You know, dude, it's going to fluctuate. There are some good Monday night games. Sometimes they're not. But, you know, WWE's known this for 30 years. It's going to fluctuate. Certainly, you know, going back to the Raw right after the Castle show on September 5th, I mean, that was really their last 2 million plus rating on Raw. It was 2 million plus for a few weeks there at the end of the summer. You know, since Paul had taken over, it went back again. No surprise. Once the NFL started, it was going to go back to the late 1 million, you know, 1.7, 1.8. I'm kind of doing the math here a little bit. I think it's been hovering around 1.8 on an average since probably after Labor Day, which I think, to be honest with you, dude, that's kind of the norm for WWF / WWE since Monday Night Football is on. And that's a good number, dude. 1.8 on an average, that's a good number, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I expected the number to be down this past Monday only because a good chunk of their audience was out trick-or-treating with their kids or out actually trick-or-treating themselves. So I kind of figured that might have been the case. But I mean, look, dude, people know they're a mainstay, they're staple. People know that there's wrestling on Monday nights. People are going to tune in and watch. You know, if there's a hot Monday night game, people are going to watch that. Obviously, you have the World Series of Poker. I'm not referring to the Baseball World Series. I choose to not acknowledge it. It is not happening in my eyes. I'm a little salty. But unlike Aaron Boone, we know what to talk about and what to do on the show. You know, they kind of expected these things, you know, and again, fans know where to get their wrestling fix on Monday night. That's obvious. So the number's going to fluctuate, especially, you know, with NFL, which NFL is king in the United States, let's be real. And you know, those numbers are going to fluctuate a tad. So, it's going to be interesting, especially coming up in these next couple of months, being that, you know, we have the Corruption World Cup coming up, and to see how the Corruption World Cup's actually going to affect the ratings, that's going to be kind of fascinating. More so, I think AEW is really going to catch the shit end of the stick there, because I mean, they really, really, really need to get their numbers up. We'll talk about it in a bit too.
But Pat, I mean, not to cut you off, but like in terms of the Corrupt World Cup, I'm with you. But I think what saves WWE and even AEW to an extent also is because of the considerable time difference, a lot of the games are during the daytime. And I think that saves prime time. You know, now again, there are replays. People will watch replays. There's no question, right? If you're at work during the day and you're not able to watch TV on a streaming service at work, like I do on my iPad or my Mac at my office, that's one thing. So yes, I think the replays in the evening, I think, will get considerable traffic, but you know, again, the games live are during the day. I think that's the one saving grace for any late afternoon primetime television viewing because of that, because of the enormous time difference. We're talking about an 8-hour time difference. So that's why the games are at 7 in the morning, 9 in the morning, noontime, respectively. Like, that's, I think, the saving grace. Now, again, when the World Cup comes to the United States, Mexico, and Canada in 2026, so that'll be very different. But presently, coming up later this month on the 20th of November, I think that sense, you know, wrestling programming, I think, might get a little bit of a reprieve because of the time difference. That's just my opinion.
Well, that's fair. I was unaware of the time difference in regards to that. I figured that some of the games might have been on at night or, you know, something like
no,
that. But
no.
To your point, yeah, probably the replay. So, yeah, no. So I'm mistaken on that. But regardless, I mean, there's still a lot of sporting events that are coming right now. NBA started, you know, hockey started. You know, if you're a Devils fan like we are, you know, obviously, you know, 5 wins in a row, you're going to want to watch that exciting front line of the Devils and those defenders. And, you know, so it's been fun, definitely, you know. And even if you're a Rangers fan, you know, that's good because you can put on a Rangers game to fall asleep. So, you know, either way, there's a lot of stuff happening, and wrestling does tend to fluctuate around this time of year anyway. So, but WWE is just going to considerably sustain that number. And, you know, to your point, I mean, 1.6, 1.8. I mean, Tony Khan would eat his father's nose to get that number regularly. You know what I mean? So
That's a big nose.
Well, you got to get around that mustache first, you know, and at least
you
have the handlebars of the mustache that you can hold on to when you eat the nose. But and we do not condone cannibalism on this show. I'd just like to put that out there right now. But yeah, no, definitely. I mean, these numbers are going to fluctuate. And I just think, again, WWE is just always in peak position to be able to capitalize their mainstay, their brand. And especially now with this reinvested good faith that they have with the fans, you know, more people are inclined to tune into WWE than, let's say, AEW.
No, definitely. The SmackDown rating was down. Again, we don't know what it was last night. It was a taped SmackDown. We'll find out what the number was anyway. Next week, but the previous week, right before Halloween weekend, it was the first SmackDown in quite some time that was not on Fox. It was on FS1, and if you don't know where FS1 is on your cable programming, or maybe you have the type of cable package where FS1 is not included, then that probably did a disservice to the number, and that was the case. SmackDown has been doing I'll just give you a rundown here. Right before the Castle show, which was a taped SmackDown, fine. It was the day before the Clash of the Castle show in the United Kingdom, in Wales. You had 2.077 on September 2nd. September 9th was 2.3. September 16th was 2.2. September 23rd was 2.5. Big number there. September 30th, 2.2. October 7th, 2.24. October 14th, 2.274. October 21st was 2.231. Now, last week, again, not necessarily because the World Series hadn't started yet, I think. No, I'm sorry. That's right. It did start. The World Series Game 1 did start on Friday, and that's why it was moved to FS1. It only got 835,000 people. That sounds like a Rampage rating, if not, or maybe a Dynamite rating. But, again, the casualty of moving to FS1, that's not going to be the case consistently. It'll be back on Fox from here on in, since the World Series is coming to an end, hopefully. Let's go Astros and close this out. You know, I know it pains me to say that, but I can't stand Philadelphia, Pat. Sorry, I can't root for anything in Philadelphia. It seems like that 35,000 number, that's just an anomaly, again, because of FS1. I mean, I like FS1. I watch it every day because I watch The Herd with Colin Cowherd. I watch Undisputed with Skip. I love Craig Carton now at 7 in the morning on my way to work. I watch Craig Carton. It's great. FS1 is great, and everyone has access to it. So that's an anomaly, man, 835,000 people for SmackDown.
Yeah, absolutely. And man, that World Series, dude, it's like you got to pick the shit salad or the shit sandwich, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like there's just no good result here, you know what I'm saying? So this is why I've been ignoring it. And I don't even want to talk about that city, you know, because, yeah, it's just there's just too much going on there. You know, obviously that's a one-off, dude. I mean, like, you're not going to see that consistently, you know. And to your point, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, either stream, whether it's through DirecTV Stream, Sling, YouTube TV. I mean, there's a variety of different types of streamers. And some of those packages, some of those basic packages might not have FS1, especially with the, you know, people who are still getting, you know, Optimum or, you know, DirecTV or whatever type of cable company you have, Comcast, whatever it is. You know, some of those people in their basic packages might not have that either. So, yeah, I mean, regardless of that, you know, also, I think there was also some people maybe that might have read the spoilers that didn't tune in, you know what I mean, because it was taped. And that tends to be the trend sometime with taped programs where people might not tune in, especially if they read the spoilers, you know, especially the hardcores. But regardless of that fact, I mean, SmackDown is still a very, very, very good show. It's consistently the best wrestling show on television. So we'll see that number get back up again for sure.
Definitely. AEW Dynamite certainly did take a bit of a dive, obviously, competing against the World Series. But AEW, which is interesting, this week it drew 997,000 viewers, basically a million. Let's just go with that. Let's just round up. It's 3,000 away. It's a million. So they did a million this week. It was considerably up from last week's 752,000 viewers, which was on a Tuesday. I know that was because of certainly the NHL debuting on TNT. So subsequently, of course, the NBA. So that's, you know, AEW is going to be struggling for the rest of the fall with the NBA and the NHL. It's going to preempt some days. Dynamite's going to have to move to a Tuesday, maybe not a Thursday per se, but definitely a Tuesday. And here are some numbers. So, obviously, this past week, even against that World Series game, which was pretty, pretty exciting to watch, 997,000 viewers. The previous week on a Tuesday, October 18th, Pat, it was 752,000 people. Yikes. Sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like an MSNBC or CNN nightly viewing. Who knows? But that was a pretty, pretty bad number. Previous week, 983,000. October 5th. 1.038, excuse me, folks. Back to September 28th, 990,000. And then it's interesting, for the better part of the end of August to most of September, even after All Out, and again, there was a lot of intrigue about what was going to go on with the Elite, with CM Punk, MJF. You know, September 21st, you had 1.039. September 14th, 1.175. September 7th, right after All Out, was only 1.035. Surprising. I thought that number would be bigger. And then August 31st was 1.020. So again, just doing some math here, looking at my notes, we're still looking at roughly, you know, late 800, well, early 900,000s. That's about the average that we've seen for the last 8 weeks here on Dynamite, about roughly early 900,000s. I think that week last week really hurt the math there. Obviously, 752,000, I think, hurts the math. You know, right around early 900,000s. Still not great numbers for Tony Khan.
I think it's better, man. Honestly, I think it's better, and I think it's look. I mean, they went from averaging what, like 600,000-700,000 consistently. That was their average. They went up some. I mean, they're popping a million even without a guy like Punk, even without huge stars on the program. So I mean, that's I think that's somewhat of a sign of improvement. And by the way, for you people out there that listen to Fernando's other shows. We don't do a bad journalist of the week here because there's only one bad journalist in wrestling. And we all know who it is. It's Dave Meltzer, which our very own Fernando got blocked by Dave Meltzer on Twitter. So, you know, we don't do that segment here because Dave Meltzer is consistently the worst journalist in wrestling. You know, regardless of his contributions to the business in the past, which I do respect, but, you know, we got to be intellectually honest here. Meltzer is not the most reliable guy. Although I will give him credit, he has been sticking it to Tony Khan a little bit lately. You know, I don't know. Maybe there's trouble in paradise there. Who knows?
Maybe that direct deposit thing yesterday to click in. You know, maybe that direct deposit's not going in on time.
That,
you
know? Well, you know what I think it boils down to. I think it boils down to the fact that Meltzer, you know, probably felt like he was a confidant of Tony's, and he's probably trying to get the scoop on the Punk situation and all that stuff. And, you know, Tony's just very tight-lipped about it. Obviously, there's, you know, some legal, there's some legal ramifications involved there. But I think that, you know, maybe because he's not kind of giving him the scoop, Meltzer's getting a little salty. And, you know, he's got to kind of, you know, clap back at him and stuff like that. So, but you know what? I'm going to do something here that nobody had in their bingo card for 2022. I'm going to give Tony Khan his flowers. I am. I'm going to give Tony Khan his flowers, man. And I'll give him his flowers for starting up a wrestling company, a nationally syndicated wrestling company, for employing a bunch of guys that probably wouldn't have been working in a nationally syndicated wrestling company otherwise, signing these guys to decent deals, helping, you know, expose them to a mainstream audience. You know, I know your favorite wrestler, Orange Cassidy. You know, he's one of those guys that, you know, probably wouldn't have gotten exposed to a mainstream audience had it not been for Tony Khan. So I give Tony Khan a lot of credit for putting guys and girls to work and for giving them an opportunity to maybe try and get out there for better or worse. So there you go. That's the only time you're ever going to hear me give Tony Khan his flowers, but I give Tony Khan his flowers here on Working the Marks.
Yeah, no question, man. If it wasn't for Tony Khan, Orange Cassidy would be, I don't know, being a roadie for Calvin Harris on the DJ residencies in Vegas. I don't know. I don't see much of the
He'd be in a Hollister ad. Ad
No, I really don't. I really don't see much out of a guy, you know, the all geography champion who, I don't know, I think he'd be a Walmart greeter somewhere in Secaucus, New Jersey. I don't know. That's what I would think. But those are our ratings there. Interesting numbers for sure. Pat, let's get to our main event this week here. Obviously, later today as we are recording, WWE Crown Jewel will emanate from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. There's been a lot of talk, obviously, in real world, life or death things that there is some turmoil between the governments of Saudi Arabia and Iran. What else is new in that volatile part of the world? And apparently the State Department had notified WWE that an imminent threat could be possible militarily on behalf of Iran, which could put the Crown Jewel event in jeopardy. Obviously, there were contingencies planned to bring the event back to the United States and have it at the PC. I don't know why they got away from the Capitol Wrestling Center. I like that name. I like that. I don't know why they got away from that. But that was a contingency planning case. It would not be possible to have Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia, but that's not the case. Later today, on Saturday, November the 5th, it will emanate live from Saudi Arabia. And I got to tell you, man, listen, I know that there's still people online that vilify WWE for still doing the show in Saudi Arabia for what it is. Obviously, WWE, under the auspices of Vince McMahon some years ago, signed a 10-year contract with the government of Saudi Arabia to bring literally what is a glorified house show to Saudi Arabia every fall, normally every October, sometimes in the spring. There's a Saudi-based show emanating from there, but by and large, it's always been in the fall, in October, November. Listen, you know, dude, I get it. People are still up in arms about it. I'm not a fan of it. I think the Saudi government is a despicable regime, but it's business. And if Vince felt it was good for merchandising, gate, exposing the product to a new demographic in the world, a new region of the world, I mean, fine. You know, I think not to get overly political here. I think you know where I stand on this regime. As a conservative, I'm not a fan of it. But okay, it's business. It does well. And we'll see, right? I think it was done in 2018, so we got 6 more years, and we'll see what happens. Under the auspices of Paul Levesque, maybe they'll extend it. Maybe after the 10 years are done, maybe they'll say, you know what, thanks, but no thanks. But I seriously doubt. I'm sure the Saudi government knows the gate it draws, the interest that it draws, the merch. I'm sure they'll come to an agreement again. But I think, you know, fans, I think, have to get over the fact that it's going to be emanating from Saudi Arabia for the next 6 years, Pat.
Yeah, I mean, people just got to deal with it. The check's in the mail, folks. You know, it's been cashed. It's in the account. That's it. It's over. I actually have a scoop from the Working with Marks contributor that we have, Sparkles Learning Garoppolo, my cat. She has actually just handed me a piece of information that says that the conflict was resolved because Adam Pearce stepped in and was able to speak to both governments, and he was able to resolve the matter as he is law and order in World Wrestling Entertainment. So thank you, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, former NWA World Champion, for being able to solve that. I mean, is there anything this guy can't do? He might be able to end racism for all we know. I mean, look, whether fans like it or not, this is the deal, man. You know, you could either watch the show or don't. If you want to protest, don't watch the show. That's fine. I respect it. No big deal. You know what I'm saying? This is one of those things where there's really no right or wrong way to feel about it. You know, hopefully my concern is that nothing happens to the talent, nothing happens to the people
Absolutely.
That are attending this
Absolutely.
Event. And, you know, hopefully this thing's able to go off without a hitch. I mean, look, WWE, they wouldn't go out there if they didn't know any of this. Obviously, Scrap Iron, I mean, you know, the U.S. government working closely with him. He's got this scoop. He was able to resolve this conflict, so... I think it's going to be a good show. You know, to some extent, I wouldn't even say it's so much a glorified house show as much as it's like a B-level WrestleMania. I think that would be I think a better way of putting it. Either way, you know, I'm really excited for it. I'm going to watch it. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do, and I'm really looking forward to chopping it up and analyzing this card here on this episode and in our main event.
No, definitely, yeah. So let's get to the card here. So, again, this is not the order, I think, of what the card will be tonight.
Oh, Fern,
but here's the matches.
Fern, I'm sorry. Yeah. Fern, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I don't know if you saw, but WWE announced they're going to be having a Wrestling World Cup now. That's going to be
– Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be good, and I think that that's going to be an opportunity to perhaps, you know, get some other new talent over and to maybe elevate some people for a mid-card title. So, I mean, you know, Paul Levesque once again kind of imprinting, you know, his image, you know, kind of creating WWE in his image again. And I'm pretty excited to see what comes of this and how they do this. Let's get to the card here.
Definitely, I think it'll be a great, great event. Definitely. Listen, people love tournaments. That's always a draw for anything. So, again, you put a tournament, you put some cup or a title on the line, I think people watch it, no question. Alexa Bliss and Asuka, the current and reigning and defending women's tag team champions, will take on Damage Control, Io Sky, my girl, and Dakota Kai for the WWE Women's Tag Team Champion, a rematch of, I think, this past Monday on Halloween night, where Alexa Bliss and Asuka won the titles. For Alexa, it's another go-around with the women's tag titles, obviously. The same thing for Asuka. Listen, these four have had great matches in this feud. I don't know if this is the culmination of a feud, but, again, I'm sure they'll have a great contest coming up later today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't matter who really wins or loses in this one. You know, Io and Dakota, they've gotten over pretty well. Some people might say maybe they should have kept the belts a little bit longer. Let's wait and see. Let's see what happens here. Alexa and Asuka, two pros. Alexa has really just become such a great talent over these last, you know, 5 years or so. And Asuka, obviously, one of the best women in the business. I expect this match to be pretty good for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Let's move up here. The other tag team titles, the undisputed WWE tag team titles will be on the line as the Usos will defend against the Brawling Brutes. I got to tell you, man, I was never a fan of Rich Holland. Notwithstanding, because of what happened with Big E, even before that, I was never very a fan of his. But him and Butch have really caught on as a tag team. That act has worked. It's gone over with the crowd. They're good workers. I mean, they've gotten it better, I would say. Butch has always been a good worker. I think Rich Holland has improved. Hopefully, again, that black eye he'll always have, I think, hopefully has dissipated already. But they've really – that gimmick has gotten over, the Brawling Brutes, and I think it's popular. The Usos, the very best tag team in the world, continue to impress. Notwithstanding the bloodline storyline with everything going on, whether someone's Usy or not Usy, and shirts are something like hotcakes. I mean, shirts are – I can't remember a time – and other than Austin, the NWO, to some extent, obviously Cena, yeah, and all the ridiculous colors of the Fruity Pebbles rainbow shirts that he had over the years. But I can't remember, dude, a merch line selling as much as the Bloodline, whether it's Roman, whether it's Head of the Table, whether it's God Mode, whether it's the Usos, We the Ones, Honorary Us, to now Sammy Uso, to Usy. I can't remember, at least in recent years, merch that has really just gone across the table. And no disrespect to Botchamania, but this has been the table right now when it comes to merch. So the Usos, I think, are just flying as high as possible, bro, right now.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners out there, we are always feeling Usy on Working the Marks. We just want to let you know that first and foremost. And, yeah, I mean, absolutely. These guys are cleaning up, man. I mean, it's a new shirt for, you know, a new catchphrase, new thing coming on. You know, I mean, it's really, really good stuff. It's definitely the most compelling program in wrestling right now. I mean, anything that the Bloodline does, people are going to pay attention to. And to your point on Rich Holland, I mean, look, you know, I think people that want to be overly critical of him, you have to understand, man, that, you know, I was a wrestler myself. I was in the ring. Accidents happen. Things happen. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure Rich Holland did not intend to do what he did to Big E, or
no,
did not intend to have happen what happened to Big E. And unfortunately, it's one of those accidents. I mean, it's not ballet. That's one of the first things they tell you when you start training. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, Rich Holland and Big E have talked about it themselves. I mean, we've seen a number of incidents, unfortunately, throughout the history of wrestling involving two talents where, you know, one gets hurt. And I'm willing to bet that it's always never intentional. I mean, you know, those territory days, that's a different story. There's probably a few intentional receipts there. But, I mean, as far as it goes with Rich Holland, you know, the guy's a pro. He was one of those dudes. He had potentially had a look. He had something, but he had no shtick. He had no gimmick. Now, you know, this Brawling Brutes thing, the stable with Sheamus, it's doing great. Butch recently had an interview with Ryan Statton where he was talking about this Butch character, because obviously there's a lot of blowback from all the marks. You know, they're all, oh, my God, they took away Pete Dunne. And, you know, they were getting all mad and stuff like that in their mom's basement and, you know, throwing their nachos across the room and all that stuff. And Pete Dunne, I just thought, was just such a pro in the way that he responded to this. And told Ryan Satin, hey, you know, now I'm getting over with kids. I'm getting over with people that, you know, quite frankly, didn't even know who I was before that. You know, before your dad used to like me, you know, or your mom used to like me, or people, you know, that were more into wrestling, you know, liked me. Now your kids are the ones that like me. And I can tell you firsthand as a parent, And my daughter loves Butcher segments, you know. My son loves Butcher segments because they see this little tenacious guy jumping at people, going crazy, acting like a little spider monkey. You know, that stuff's appealing to kids. Kids are going to want to watch that stuff. And I think it's really mature of him, and it's really professional of him to understand that and to recognize the opportunity to be able to get himself over with another part of the audience and to monetize himself and to, you know, potentially turn it into something that, that could be lucrative with merchandising and stuff like that. So really, really smart guy. Obviously, you know, for him to be working with the WWE at such a young age with Tyler Bate, with Trent Seven, those guys, you know, being there so young, getting the opportunity to work big, you know, pay-per-view matches and stuff like that, and to be a part of the WWE at that young age, you have to have a certain level of maturity. And Pete Dunne, Butch, has really shown that maturity. I expect this match to be nothing short of awesome. The Usos, I mean, some people might say that there's a better tag team than them out there. I beg to differ, and I think that the stats and the match quality and the numbers do not lie, and they are in the favor of the Usos. So this one should be another great contest from those teams.
No, definitely. Bianca Belair will defend the Raw Women's title against Bayley, and first time ever, if I'm not mistaken, for the Raw Women's Championship, a last woman standing match. Now, let me just say this. Notwithstanding the region of the world where this is taking place, clearly we know that both ladies are going to be as covered up as possible. They'll be wrestling in turtlenecks. I don't know what the weather is. Let me try to check the weather as we talk right now. But they'll be wrestling in basically turtlenecks and long sleeves and pants, you know, out there in Saudi Arabia. Listen, I've never been a fan of Bayley as a face. I hated that music. It was insufferable to me. I've liked her heel act. I don't like the presentation of it. I don't like the gear or whatever, but she's been a great heel, always been an amazing worker, great on the microphone, better now as a heel, clearly. You know how I felt about Bianca. I don't get the gimmick. Great worker. She has picked up the business really well, so much that her and her husband, Montez Ford, are getting a show on Hulu. Folks, if that is not an indicator, I mean, Stevie Wonder can see this. If that's not an indicator of how over this couple is and the potential that WWE sees in them, I don't know what to tell you. But she's grown on me. I still don't like the gimmick, but she's grown on me. She's developed immensely as a worker. She gets it. Very fluid and smooth in the ring. She's a natural athlete. I'd like to see, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'd like to see Bianca go over later today.
To me personally, it doesn't really matter who goes over in this one. I think it's just going to be another great match from two great workers. Bayley, always just one of the, always, you know, trailblazing for the women's division, man. You know, first women's ladder match for a singles title, last woman standing match, you know. So she continues to just do what she does. And I just think that when Bayley's career is said and done, you know, and her time is up in the ring, you know, people are going to really look back at a lot of the things that she's accomplished and definitely consider her one of the all-time greats. In my opinion, she's already one of the all-time greats. The way she was able to adapt, to your point, you know, she had that over-the-top, you know, kiddie personality and stuff like that. And that got over huge with the kids, and that helped, you know, make her a star. Obviously, you know, when she turned heel, she killed the Bayley buddies, cut her hair and all that stuff. That was a big, big change. It took a little time, I think, for her to kind of find her groove, find her voice as a heel. Now it's just like she gets it, you know. She, you know, even with the gear, like you were saying, you know, you don't like it. That's good that you don't like it. You're not supposed to like it because, you know, you want to get her away from being likable, from being a baby face. And,
sure.
You know, a lot of the time changing people's gear, changing people's theme song, the shtick, the act, that goes a long way. Bianca Belair, man, I mean, just what a talent. What an elite talent, the way that she's been able to grow, the way that she's just become better and better and better and better each time out there. And, you know, whether people like the gimmick or not, you know, she's just able to bring it in the ring every single time.
Oh,
and she connects with the audience and she connects with all demographics. So I expect this to be a great match, whoever wins. And it should be a good one. It should be a good one regardless of
yeah, definitely.
You know, the circumstances.
No, No, definitely. And just as a side note here, I just did do a search, and unfortunately, Pat, it will be 85 degrees right now in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, as Crown Jewel is about to go live in just a few moments. So,
that's like the weather by us right now. That's like the weather by us right now.
Yeah, it's 72 degrees right now. It's crazy up here in North Jersey. It's unbelievable.
But climate change ain't real, right? Climate change ain't real.
Well, that's not real. The variety in weather is good. You know, nothing wrong with that. But moving on here to Braun Strowman versus Omos. I got to tell you, man, I love seeing Braun Strowman back. I don't like the new theme music. I like the old one. There was just something about it that was humorous and, like, menacing. I don't know about Omos, dude. I just think that they've tried with this guy. They've tried getting him over. They put him in a plethora of squash matches. Great to have MVP with him as a mouthpiece. He needs that. I don't know, man. There's something missing about Omos. I don't know how much longer they're going to keep going to the well with this guy and keep pushing him. Again, he checks off a lot of boxes that you want in a menacing monster. But I don't know how much longer the Omos experiment is going to continue. I'm sorry. I don't know, man. I don't see. I think this is a filler match just to have two guys who are menacing go at each other. I don't expect, obviously, the best matchup here. We're not going to see Ricky Steamboat, Randy Savage. And nor is that what's expected. But I think this is probably one of the filler matches for tonight, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for that kind of audience, for wrestling fans in general, you always like to see two giants go at it and watch the car crash. Edward James Omos, he has just not been able to really catch on. And the guy has been given opportunities. They've changed up the shtick. They've given him a mouthpiece. They've booked them in all these squash matches and stuff like that, and crowd reaction's just not there. Obviously, between the two menacing monsters, we know that Braun Strowman is over with the crowd. Braun Strowman is a more polished performer in that regard. I'm not going to say that he's Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, or Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, or anything like that, but he's definitely good at what he does. I expect him to be the guy that's carrying this match. I'm gonna try to be optimistic about it. I hope that this is agented well, and I hope that Omos is able to do his part and able to at least put in a good shift for this one. So yeah, I'm kind of curious about this one, but let's see how it goes.
Definitely. Again, I'm sure it'll be entertaining. Some bumps, some hollering, some screaming. It'll be interesting. Match I'm interested in, obviously, Drew McIntyre against Karrion Kross inside the confines of a 15-foot high steel cage. Again, I don't expect to see Scarlett there. It's that region of the world that won't let women, wear what they want. But, obviously, notwithstanding not seeing Scarlett, which disappoints all straight men everywhere, I think this could be the match of the night without question. I think you can see
well,
a lot of
why just straight men? Why just straight men? There's gay men that like her. There's women that like her. There's all types of people that like her. She is aesthetically pleasing to a variety of people,
that's fair.
Not just limited as straight men,
Well, by and large, straight men everywhere are disappointed, so let's be honest.
That's what Google's for. That's what Google's for, okay? And it builds up anticipation to see her in some skimpy outfit again.
There you go. But I think this has to potentially be the match of the night in this cage.
I think it could be very good. It's going to be interesting to see how these guys put it together. I have a different pick for match of the night, but it should be good. I'm curious to see how Kross is going to do in these spots, and how he's going to kind of take the ball and run with it. You know what I mean? So this should be kind of interesting. I think it's a good feud for both guys. More importantly for Kross, because he's working with a former main eventer, in Drew there. And I think that, even though Kross is a very talented performer, he has great mentality. He gets it, if you will. He still doesn't have that experience of being like a main event guy just yet, and Drew has that. And I think that, if we've known anything from Kross, he's always willing to learn. And I think that he's going to do well in this spot. So yeah, I mean let's see how it goes.
Yeah, no question. I think a great match. I think listen, anytime you see a cage match, it's always got the potential for a lot of good bumps and spots for sure. A match I think that really helps to headline this event in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia: Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley. We got a taste of it earlier this year in January at the Royal Rumble. Two guys who just, you know, are just beaten out. I mean, excuse the pun, beasts in the ring, very physical guys who work well together from what we've seen. I don't think this is a one-off. I think after Lesnar cost Bobby Lashley the coveted United States Heavyweight Championship. I think this match is going to be a knockdown dragout, as they say.
Yeah, dude, this is going to be awesome. This is another one of those, you know, dream matches that the fans got a chance to see in January. Unfortunately, it wasn't what it could have been, but it was still pretty darn good, in my opinion. I'm excited about this. I think the build has been great. The segments that they had on TV were good. This is just going to be just two legit shoot fighters beating the shit out of each other for our enjoyment. This is as close as we get to, you know, the gladiators in the Coliseum, and, you know, kaijus, you know, Godzilla taking on Mothra, you know, or Ghidorah. It's going to be awesome, and I expect a lot of suplexes for sure.
Absolutely. I think it'll be a great contest, certainly. A match I think I'm really looking forward to, because I think there's an element that maybe, I don't know, Mike Service will see. The OC, AJ Styles, Karl Anderson, Luke Gallows. Good to see Anderson and Gallows back in WWE. We'll take on the Judgment Day, Finn Balor, Damian Priest, and Dominic Mysterio. Obviously, the wild card in this match certainly is Rhea Ripley at ringside. Will the OC have a female to counter Rhea Ripley? We don't know. It seems like that's like the missing component from this feud. But I think this match, another candidate maybe for match of the night.
Yeah, man. Definitely, man. I mean, you know, these guys are all friends too, especially Finn, you know, with Gallows and Anderson and AJ. So obviously they're going to lay it in a little bit extra. You know that the other two guys in Judgment Day, Priest and Dominic, man, you know, let me tell you something. If there's not a more underrated heel in the business than Dominic Mysterio, I mean, if you could find me one, I'm curious to see a better, more underrated heel than Dominic Mysterio, because Dominic Mysterio, every time he touches that microphone, he stands out there with that Eddie Guerrero-esque mullet, you know, and it's just all the storyline, all the character work that's been going on with him and his father. I mean, Dominic is just over, man. He is over as a heel. And the Judgment Day's been doing a lot of great stuff. They've been getting over his heels. This match should be really, really good, and I think that all these guys are going to put in a great shift. You know, I heard something interesting recently. I think it was on Keeping 100, and somebody had sent in a question as to who people feel is the better younger talent, or who's done better as a younger talent, Hook or Dominic Mysterio. There's no question it's Dominic Mysterio, okay? This guy, look at the people that he's working with. Look at the positions that he's been in. Look at the company that he's working in, and all the talent that he has around him and all the guidance that he has around him. There's no doubt in my mind that Dominic Mysterio is light years ahead of Hook. And from what I understand as well, Hook is not really necessarily that concerned with wrestling. No surprise here, folks. I think he wants to be a model, or he wants to get into fashion or something like that, which, you know, you could kind of buy into it with the whole blue steel face that he's always, you know, busting out there on TV. But Dom, I think that Dom is his trajectory is really, really good. And I just think that, you know, once he gets that body component, you know, he gets that muscle on him, he looks a little bit better physically, you know, with his background. You know, and again, working with guys like Edge, working with guys like Priest, Valeria, you know, his father, having all this guidance, having all these guys backstage that are helping him out, sky's the limit for Dominic Mysterio. And I'm going to call it now. I think he's going to be one of the biggest Latino stars in the business in the next couple of years.
I don't disagree with you. I think the oversight that he has working with veterans like Finn Balor, with up and coming stars like Damian Priest. I almost said Judas Priest, Jesus. and Rhea Ripley, I think, is going to serve him very, very well. Again, you just said it perfectly, the oversight, you know, having that guidance. By, again, not that osmosis is always what's evident, but I think being around seasoned people that understand the business, I think, is a good thing for Dominic, for sure. Let's move on to another good match here tonight. Obviously, I think this is the main event here this evening. It is Roman Reigns, the head of the table, a guy who has not been pinned. It was just reported this week on Bleacher in over, I believe, 600 days. He has not been pinned. I think the last time that Roman Reigns was pinned was sometime in 2019. That's just an astronomical, ridiculous statistic to even think about. But Roman Reigns will take on Logan Paul, the social media star, the really, you know, a boxing star to some extent, right? A guy who is, has been really, really, I think, taking pop culture by storm. I think a guy that, you know, interviews well, who has only had two real professional matches on television. And boy, has he impressed in both of them, at WrestleMania this year in Dallas and at SummerSlam in Nashville this year. I mean, talk about a guy who picked it up like he was picking up a hobby, okay? Like, all of a sudden, a guy who's never read comic books is now, you know, a comic book aficionado. I mean, I'm trying to think of a wine aficionado. I mean, this is a guy he's very talented. He's athletic. He has really, really impressed a lot of people. Paul Levesque, obviously, he's a draw. And a lot of people gave Paul Levesque and WWE a lot of shit on Twitter and on social media. Like, why is Logan Paul getting a title shot? Why? What has he done to earn it? You know, why are we bypassing other people? Well, here are the facts, folks. You know, Drew McIntyre and Roman had a great match at Clash of the Castle in September. It's not to say that Drew McIntyre won't get a title shot again. I'm sure he will. You know, you bring back someone like Karrion Kross, you got to elevate him. What do? You put him to work with one of the bigger stars. Randy Orton right now, we don't know physically where he's at, how his back is. It's not to say there isn't a shortage of challengers, but the fact of the matter is that you have to put something compelling to main event with Roman Reigns. And I think this is a good business decision. It gets eyes on the product that people normally don't have. You know, people that don't subscribe to Peacock, right, and have to endure Crown Jewel with the 37 ads or watching anything else with 37 ads, you know, will maybe, hey, maybe they won't subscribe to Peacock, but they'll order the pay-per-view. It's a win-win from a money perspective. So, folks, you don't need a PhD from Harvard Business School to understand that this is good business. And I think that's what people are really myopic, Pat, about what this match signifies.
I mean, bro, it's almost as if people forgot, like, wrestling history. You know what I'm saying? It really is. You know what I'm saying? Did Mr. T deserve to be in the main event of WrestleMania 1? You know, did any of these people deserve to be anything? You know, I mean, bro, it's a business. You know, you got to attract stars. You got to attract a different audience. You got to expand your audience. And to be quite honest, this coincides with what was leaked at the beginning of the year, what Billy Body had reported, that WWE wanted to try and get back that demographic from 12 to 18. They want to be cool again. They want these kids to have their very own attitude era. And, you know, they want kids to be able to experience these things, and this is a great way of doing it. You know, you're getting a dude that, for better or worse, has built up a reputation as a YouTube influencer. And he is a combat sports star. That's right. He is a combat sports star. People could talk about, well, you know, he didn't earn it. He didn't this. He didn't that. I mean, they've been telling this guy that he hadn't earned anything for years. He didn't earn a chance to fight these guys as a boxer. He didn't earn a chance to fight Floyd Mayweather. He's not a real boxer. His brother's not a real boxer. But guess what? These guys, they're generating interest. They're making money. They're making people watch. This is a smart move, not only for the E, but for Logan Paul, for his brand, and I just think it's a win-win for everybody around, and I'm going to call it now. I think this is going to be match of the night. I think Roman, especially where Roman's at right now, the talent level that he's at right now, he's going to help him have a fantastic match. The production, the oversight, the agency, everything is going to be there. I think with Logan Paul, look, they're not going to invite you to keep coming back, and they're not even going to offer you a contract if you don't do all the right things backstage. Because being out in front of the crowd is big. Connecting with the audience is huge. Performing in that ring and being able to understand and grasp the technical aspects of it is big. However, the most important thing is how you respect the boys and the girls backstage. You know, how you present yourself, if you're humble, if you act the right way. And to me, it seems like Logan Paul, regardless of his TV persona, regardless of his internet persona and everything that he and his brother have established, they're very, very respectful of the professional wrestling business, of the people that are in the business, the boys and the girls. They're doing things the right way backstage, and that matters a lot. That matters a lot, and I think that is really what helps put you in these positions, because you have that good faith. You have that trust, you know? And I think that people understand, hey, this is more eyes on our product. This is more people that are going to see us, that are going to see this card. You know, who knows? There might be somebody who might be watching WWE just for Logan Paul that might end up liking another wrestler, and that might make them merch money. You know what I mean? So it all kind of contributes to the grand scheme of things, and I think Logan Paul deserves this opportunity. Triple H thinks he deserves this opportunity, more importantly. So whatever any booger-eating mark that's complaining about it on Twitter or whatever else, you know, you could stick it, pal, okay? Because Triple H and the people that matter, the wrestling people that matter in this industry, they're the ones who feel like he belongs in that spot. And I think that this kid's going to knock it out of the park again. And I expect it to be a match of the night.
I think it'd be a great match for sure. I think it'd be a great card, certainly. And I think, listen, I think even to your point, it's sort of like a secondary WrestleMania type atmosphere, secondary WrestleMania type of card, I think, or event. Every year thus far in terms of what Crown Jewel represents. So, you know, we'll see. Again, it's...
One more thing here. I just want to add to this. And you know this better than anybody else, right? People being divisive and divisive things attract more people. They attract more viewers. They attract more of an audience. So if think about this. There's more people talking about Logan Paul being in the main event of this show than there are people talking about the main event of AEW, right? Fox News, right? They got a lot of viewers. Why? Because it's divisive. It's divisive, okay? It's divisive. Not everybody likes it. Some people do like it. You know what I'm saying? But people are going to tune in because they want to watch it. You're a brand of media. There's people out there that don't like you. We know. We've all heard it. You bury them every week, you know what I mean? But people tune in to watch you, for better or worse, because they want to see what you're going to say. They want to see what you're going to say. They want to see what's going to come out of your mouth. Polarizing things, they generate interest. Look at John Cena, you know what I mean? Look at everything he did. Look at the amount of interest, for better or worse, that he generated. And I think that this is just another example of that, and Triple H knows that. And I mean, more people are talking about this than they are talking about this week's episode of AEW, and that should tell you everything you need to know right there.
Listen, absolutely. More people are talking about Crown Jewel right now than you know, squeaky wheel, top-heavy machinery, whatever, I think 2 weeks from now at the Prudential Center, right in our backyard here. And that's an indictment of where AEW is. Again, one of their bigger pay-per-views of the year coming up here in the New York area, where you would think, bro, this is Mark Central, okay? This is probably the capital of marks on the planet when it comes to pro wrestling in the New York, New Jersey area. If you can't fill up the Prudential Center, there's a problem. And I say this to all my AEW fans. I got classmates from grad school that I talked to in a group chat. If you can't fill up the Prudential Center coming up in 2 weeks from today, and I know the card doesn't look very good right now, but if you can't fill it up, I'm sorry. I don't want to hear anything about the fact that, you know, when I call it a niche product and you call it a niche product and it's a niche audience, that's what it is. I'm sorry. That's what it's going to be. But we'll have time to dissect Full Gear coming up in a couple of weeks here. But a good card coming up today on Peacock. Again, if you don't subscribe.
Fern. We totally forgot. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but we totally forgot. I believe that Bray Wyatt will be on the show as well. He will be appearing on the show as well.
I'm curious to see
what will happen, but I believe that it's going to be something interesting. So let's see.
That's right. Especially after that debut in Philadelphia at the Wells Fargo Center during Extreme Rules, I think it'll be interesting what Paul's been doing to present Bray Wyatt. I think it'll be very interesting to see. Folks, before we call it a day, on this day in wrestling history, on November the 5th, a couple goodies here for us. In 1994, ECW presented November to Remember from the world-famous ECW Arena in downtown Philadelphia on the South Side. And this is the event that we have all seen the image. This is the event that saw Chris Benoit break Sabu's neck, which birthed the name The Crippler. The action occurred just 2 minutes into the main event and stopped the match subsequently. After you see that, really, again, folks, go to YouTube. It was a really, it's tough to watch that bump that Sabu took, for sure. Too Cold Scorpio came out to the ring as a replacement for Sabu, and he and Benoit wrestled to a double countout. Obviously, elsewhere on the card, the Sandman turned heel. It's almost like the Big Show at some point when he revealed he was actually not blind, but attacked Tommy Dreamer and was announced as the new client of Woman, as we all got to know who that is, Robin Green. God rest her soul. In addition, the Public Enemy won their second ECW tag team titles over Mick Foley and Mikey Whipwreck. Also on this day in wrestling history, folks, in the year 2000, in their first pay-per-view since the national TV deal with TNN ended, ECW once again presented November to Remember from Villa Park, Illinois. And it was kind of an unremarkable card. It was headlined by a unique double jeopardy match where the bout was essentially a four-man tournament for the ECW world title, with both semifinals occurring in the same ring at the same time, with the final beginning as soon as the semifinal match is finished. In the two semifinals, Steve Corino defeated the Sandman. Just Incredible defeated Jerry Lynn. And that led Steve Corino to beat Just Incredible to become the new ECW World Champion. On this day, in November 5th in 2001, on a very famous episode of Monday Night Raw, The Rock defeated Chris Jericho to win the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. In 2002, at a SmackDown taping in Manchester, New Hampshire, Edge and Rey Mysterio defeated Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit in a classic 2 out of 3 falls match to win the new SmackDown Tag Team titles. That was shortly after the brand extension, the very first one that it happened in 2002. In 2006, the first ever WWE Cyber Sunday took place in Cincinnati, Ohio. The event pretty much kept the same fan voting theme as its predecessor, Taboo Tuesday. In the main event, World Heavyweight Champion King Booker defeated WWE Champion John Cena and ECW Champion The Big Show in what was billed as the Champion of Champions match on the same card. Rowdy Roddy Piper, God rest his soul, and Ric Flair defeated the Spirit Squad to win the Raw World Tag Team titles. It was Piper's first title in WWE since 1992 when he won the Intercontinental title, and only his second overall. Also in 2017, Impact Wrestling's Bound for Glory, their WrestleMania essentially, took place in Ottawa, Canada. The only title change on the card saw Gail Kim defeat Ali to become the Women's Knockouts Champion, and Sami Callihan also made his Impact debut. Also, some notable birthdays. Allison Kay was born on this day in 1987, and also Alexander Wolf was born on this day in 1986. That's, folks, what happened in pro wrestling history today on November the 5th. Pat, before we call it a show, what we got coming up for you? What should we keep an eye out for?
Well, I just want to add another piece of wrestling history. I know that the next time we record, it'll probably be on November 12th. But on November 9th, 1997, it was a pretty momentous piece of wrestling history that day. It was the 1997 Survivor Series. That's right, folks. That was the day that Bret Hart squealed in agony and tapped out to his very own sharpshooter that was applied to him by the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. And Shawn once again became the WWF champion. So that was a wonderful piece of wrestling history and one that we'll certainly never forget. I mean, I could still hear Bret's screams in agony and in anguish to this day. And what a moment that was. So that's another one we got to add in there, since we won't be able to talk about it, the next time we're on the air. But aside from that,
special yes. programming note, folks, I made a point to omit that from today's lineup of on this day in pro wrestling history for personal reasons, folks. But, Pat, go on.
Well, I mean, what, are you going to cry about it? Or, you know what? Why don't we just do this? Let's blame Goldberg, right? I think that would be a good thing. We could blame Goldberg for that one. But I'll never forget that. I mean, the Heartbreak Kid applying that sharpshooter expertly, I mean, it was almost as if Owen taught him, you know, the move himself, because obviously Owen's the creator of the move, and he taught Brett, and he stole it. You know, Brett stole it from Owen. Everybody knows that. You know what I mean? And poor Stu, he was there in his orthopedic tuxedo, you know, probably in Calgary watching it. Such a sad moment. Really looking forward to, just being back with you again, folks. I know we were off for a little while there. The professor and I were just two styling and profiling guys. So obviously we weren't able to be with you these last couple of weeks, but we look forward to bringing you more great content here on Work in the Marks. And that's pretty much it. Don't send me any DMs. Do not send me nudes. Do not send me any chain letters or any opportunities for some kind of business in Gabon or in another part of the world. So, and please just don't send me any messages. That's all.
Okay. All right. Well, folks, again, tune in this Monday to Real Talk with Fernanda Uribe. Well, I will have New Jersey State Assemblywoman Victoria Flynn coming on, a very, very, one of the newer assemblywomen in the legislature, very energetic. We're going to have a lot to say about what's going on with the midterms and certainly what's going on in the political climate in New Jersey. Big bills pending in the legislature in Trenton. A lot of that and more, folks, this Monday again. Make sure you tune in on Real Talk via Jersey First TV. You can check it out on YouTube. You can check it out on LinkedIn. You can check it out on jerseyfirst.org, as well as on Facebook Live via StreamYard on my own Facebook, and also on Twitter. All the platforms will be broadcasting live this Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for the latest edition of Real Talk. And let me just get a little heat here because I've been dying to say this, but folks, remember, change your clock backs on Sunday because of daylight savings time. And most importantly, ladies and gentlemen, this Tuesday, change your country back on election day. Go out and vote, folks, this Tuesday. Change your clock backs tomorrow, and let's change the country back for the better this coming Tuesday. Let's make it red, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our
Come on, man. I don't think it's fair that, you know, you're trying to throw in your angles and your gimmicks. Your people, vote however you want to vote. You want to vote red, vote red. You want to vote blue, vote blue. Write in Ross Perot if you have to. It doesn't matter. Oliver North, whoever you want to write in somebody, people, but get out and vote. I definitely agree with that message, folks. If there's stuff that's going on, stuff with the economy, social stuff, whatever it is, inflation, whatever you want to talk about, whatever it is that is driving you to get out and vote, exercise your right as an American to go out and vote, people, and definitely take advantage of that. Whether you vote red, blue, green, purple, vote for Grimace, I don't care, but just get out there and vote, people, and make your voice be heard.
That's right. That's right. Again, folks, just, you know where I feel, folks. Again, and I'll see you live on Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. But, folks, I want to thank you for joining us here this week on, of course, our great podcast. Write to us on our inbox, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Listen, what you like about the show, a shout-out to D. Rotten, our boy who oversees the inbox, and, of course, all the great technical stuff on the program here. So God bless him for all his good work. Folks, make sure you like us on Facebook. For all of you Facebook subscribers, when you're not being shadow banned or censored, make sure you click that like button. Sharing is caring. Do so and show your support for Work in the Marks, ladies and gentlemen. Also, hit us up on Instagram. Pat doesn't want any DMs, but I gladly welcome DMs all the time. @working_the_marks. And of course, check out our own Instagrams at Patty Reakin for PBR, at PaddyRican. And of course, check out my own Instagram at the Fernando Zone. And also make sure you check us out on Twitter. Now that Twitter seems to be a more speech zone.
Before you finish up your whole spiel, I just want to also throw it out there that I'm probably going to be going live. I will be actually going live on Instagram after Romancing the Stone is done. So you can catch me on there. I'm going to be just kind of opining on some of this stuff. I'd love to have the interaction with you people through that page. Just don't hit me up on my personal page because I'll fucking punch your mom. But yeah, definitely hit me up on hit me up on the Work in the Marks Instagram. I'm going to be going live there after Romance in the Stone is done, and we're going to have a lot to talk about there. If you'd even care to join me, if you're not busy styling and profiling, maybe hanging out at Waterside, catching a drink with a lovely lady, it'd be good to get some of your insight as well on a live video. But yeah, folks, sorry that the Instagram's been a little bit dry lately. We're going to be, you know, giving you some great content on there. So yeah, we really appreciate all the support. We even appreciate the hate. Fernando appreciates the hate. You know that. So we just look forward to bringing you more content, and just always fun here to be able to shoot the shit and chop it up all things wrestling.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, folks, check it out on Instagram. Again, our Instagram at @working_the_marks. Again, for PBR at Paddy Reekin, PaddyRican. My own Instagram again at the Fernando Zone. And folks, check us out on Twitter. The new free speech zone there, thankfully, courtesy Elon Musk.
With no sponsors.
What's that?
With no sponsors. With no sponsors. Isn't he begging people to be sponsored?
Well, I think he wants you to pay $8. You want that blue check mark again? You want to keep your blue check mark? No problem. Capitalism at its finest. Pay $8 a month, folks. You want that blue check mark? I don't have it. I don't care. But yeah, listen, I guess, you know, you got to make money somehow, right? But folks, check out PBR on Twitter at PatrickSKVM. Check out my own Twitter at the Fernando Zone as well. Folks, if you're bitching about it, we're talking about it. It's always here on Blog Talk Radio, folks, because he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the illustrious PBR. I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, the professor Fernando Uribe, folks. And every single week, nobody does it better because we are always working the marks right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you next week, folks. Please party responsibly. Get out and vote. And we'll see you next time here on Working the Marks. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Chico.